This is ContactTalkRadio.com, consciousness in action, and you are taking action into your consciousness by tuning into Contact Talk Radio.
And on TuneIn.com, Hing.fm, and UpSnap Mobile.
Contact Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Carol Reitberger Show, where each week you'll hear a new topic dealing with health and wellness. Carol will be taking your calls and answering your personal questions. And now, here's Carol.
Hello, and thank you for joining me. I'm your host, medical intuitive Carol Reitberger, and the topic of today's show is on creating healthy habits and what can we do to change those old habits. Now, I understand I've only got an hour with you to start to do this process. I'm going to share a bunch of things, but then, of course, it comes down to it, as it always does, it's always up to you. So we're going to be talking about changing healthy habits and then also changing those habits, change how we feel about ourselves. And when we feel better about ourselves, then changing and creating healthy habits becomes much more easy for us to do. As they keep, I keep reading and hearing, is that the changing of old patterns ought to be effortless. And it's like, oh, really? But I do know that if we do, where it starts is it starts with ourselves. So what I'm going to be talking about is to create really visualizations, images that you can put in place, you can hold in your mind, and you can use those images when you get into a place where an obstacle just bounces in front of you and you're not sure exactly what to do. So the creating of new habits is really one step at a time. So that's kind of a sneak preview of what today's show is going to be. I'm also going to be taking your calls. So if you have a question for me about your health, or you want to talk about today's topic or whatever is going on in your life, because the energy is very, very intense right now. In fact, you can cut it with a knife. And I use that metaphor not loosely, because really it is either you're going to make the changes or your past is going to continue to move you forward. It's that simple. Not easy to deal with, but that simple. And so we can talk about the energy, we can talk about the health, and of course the topic on what can we do to change these habits that we have that seem to just continue those old patterns. So if you have a question for me, you can call me at 877-230-3062. That number is good in the U.S. and Canada. And then also international callers, call your international calling code, and then 877-230-3062. I've been talking about my soulful connection bracelets that I created as a reminder for myself to remain connected to my soul. And I wasn't really sure what that meant in many ways, but the more that I spend time doing that, the more I realize is that that deep inner essence of who we are really helps us see life clearly. It cuts through all the old patterns of behavior, the old emotional reactions, those old self-perceptions, and it connects us with a part of ourselves that is very pure, that is like that innocent child that believes that they can do anything, and they know they're going to do anything, and they're going to work hard in that direction. So in the Soulful Connection bracelets, they were created to connect you with your soul. So when you get to places in particular where it just seems like you don't know where to go, what to do, you just step back and you ask yourself, soul, how do you see this situation? And it's absolutely phenomenal. And for me, kind of mind-blowing, and the feedback I'm getting from the people who have purchased the bracelets also are saying the same thing. When you say to your soul, soul, how do you see things happening? It's very clear, it's very concise, it's not complicated, and it just helps give the clarity so then we can move beyond all the minutiae in our mind and be able to look at the options and then execute and take action on the options itself. So what we do is the Soulful Connection bracelet is it is all about us to connect us with ourselves. But I really found as I've been creating these bracelets, I found that what it does is it really strengthens that deep connection that I have with people who are important in my life. And so when I wear my bracelets, then what I do is that I find that it connects me with my own soul, but it also reminds me of the people who love me, who care about me, who I love and I care about, and how we are connected in an energetic level. So the Soulful Connection bracelets I'm finding goes well beyond the initial intention of why it was created. And found that now what we're doing is my desire was to create an energetic web of love and healing energy and deep soul connection. And I believe that one person, one bracelet at a time, we can build that connection, and then we can raise our thinking, our consciousness, into that place where we do realize at the very core that we are deeply loved and that we are cared about. So there, you heard me mention that I wear my bracelets. There are actually 18 different colors that are available. The charms on each one of the bracelets, there's 13, are all the same. And the reason for that is each one of these charms actually has a symbolic message associated with it that can help you remember that you are a star, that you are loved, that you are full of potential, that life is a transformation, and that the key to the difference in what you want in your life lies within not only your intuition, but that intuition found in the heart. So if you want to know more about the bracelets and you want to hear about the story about why they were created and the symbolism of the 13 different charms, just go to my website, www.ritberger.com. Click on that slide that says Soulful Connection Bracelets on the home page, and it will take you to a page where you can browse all the colors. If you find a color that you like, I mean, I started out with a color, and then it's like, oh, my gosh, I need to have every single color. And so I created every color. Of course, it goes with all my different wardrobe. But more importantly, each one of the colors has their own vibration. And I find that many times the color that I'm going to wear in the bracelet for the day really has to do more with where I am psychologically and the energy I need than actually matching my clothes. So you can look at each one of the bracelets. If a bracelet speaks to you, click on the color and look at the color and then look at the symbolism of the charms itself, and you can order all the bracelets online. And again, the response has been phenomenal. So all of you who have purchased bracelets, thank you so much. As Bruce and I create these bracelets, I designed them. Right now we're the ones that are creating them. My energy and Bruce's energy, because we're a team, goes into each bracelet, and we have a lot of fun doing it. And I have a lot of fun reading the names of the people that purchased the bracelets and then connecting with them at a soul, deep soul level, and expanding my soul community. So to find out more about the bracelets, just go to www.ritberger.com. One of the things, I've always been fascinated by human nature, and I've been always wondering is why is it as part of our human nature, excuse me, that we seem to aim high and we fall short, even when the best intentions, I mean, we can motivate ourselves, we can cheer ourselves on, we can have the best of intentions, but for some reason, many of us just seem to fall short. And in reality, every single one of us as humans that grace this earth falls short in some way. So it's been something that I've been very curious about, something that I've really wanted to know. What are the difference between excuse me, what are the different, hello, I must need to work on my fifth chakra and speaking my personal power. So here we go, deep voice. So I've been really wondering, not only within myself, obviously, but with looking at just understanding human nature, is that, you know, what is it that makes the difference between the people who succeed? And again, that succeeding is based on my standards and my measurements of success. There isn't a one size fits all. But I've always wondered, what is it about them that, you know, makes them succeed when we really have a lot of people who are very good at what they do, are very talented, are working within their natural strengths. They're really working hard at trying to succeed, but for some reason they don't. And I wanted to know why. So I literally, as for my lifetime, but in the most recent time as we move into this enlightenment consciousness, I really wanted to see why, if I could find the answer to this question, or even answers to the common question, not what is success, but why do some people succeed and others seem to struggle their life in trying to get that success that they're looking for. The deeper that I really delved into the problem and really trying to understand what it was, I kept running up against one consistent factor that just seemed to play out in all of the stories of the people who succeeded and the people who have struggled with succeeded. And the thing that I found in that consistent factor is those who struggle to succeed have a difficult time letting go of long-term habits. Now, these long-term habits are the habits that were created very early in Life is a means of our survival. From birth to 13, we're very emotionally impressionable. We are trying to fit into this world. We're trying to fit into the family. We get into preschool. We try to fit into that dynamics. We go into kindergarten, and we think that we're going to, you know, go, and that's going to be the answer, and we struggle with that. And then we get into third grade, and we go again in fifth grade, and it just seems like an ongoing struggle. But what happens is along each one of these different paths that we take, and our need to fit in and to be loved, to feel like we can make a difference in our own life and really develop that internal part of who we are, we have to go through a series of obstacles. And those obstacles, at the time that we experience them, are based on thought patterns. We create a thought pattern around an obstacle. Oh, this is hard. And then we feel every time we come up against something like that, that old pattern, that old thinking comes in and goes, oh, this is hard. So what I really found out is that old habits, really, if we're going to break them or change them, I mean, I don't even like to use the word break old habits, because then it feels like it's us against our old habits. But to really go in and to change those habits, what we merely need to do is that we need to just take those old habits and we need to adjust them to our current mindset, our current level of motivation, and the intentions that we have in where we are at the moment. The problem is that we don't think in those terms. And one of the things is that we enjoy the dreaming part, and dreaming is really a lot of fun. But what I found the difference in people who succeed and people who don't is that they have to stop dreaming, because if we dream and they just remain dreams because our old habits actually are impacting the manifestation, then we just find that we don't get there. And even if we do get there a little bit, it doesn't give us the personal satisfaction. So what I've learned is, if dreams are to become what we desire, then we have to begin by starting small with taking those short-term achievable goals and building the self-confidence around accomplishing those small goals. And then we set realistic expectations. And the thing is dreaming, we don't think about the expectations. But if we want to, hypothetically, I was talking to someone the other day that said that they really would like to generate $2 million. And I asked them how they were going to do that based on what they were doing. They said, I didn't know that it was just going to happen. Well, yes, it will happen. But it takes a lot of planning. It takes starting small. It takes being realistic. It takes baby steps in that. Even if you play the lottery, then that's part of a step in the process. So what I found is that we really need to be realistic in the expectations that we set for ourselves. So when we hit those obstacles and those challenges that come along, then what we'll do is we can go back to the plan. We can go back to the goals. We can go back to those accomplishments and those baby steps, and then what we can do is we can start to move forward in a way that we can find ourselves breaking those habits or changing those habits. So what we do is we have to find a deep part of the motivation. Why are we doing what we're doing? Why are we moving forward the way that we are moving forward? What is it that is motivating us? Is it to prove someone else wrong? That's probably not the motivation that's going to sustain us when we hit those challenges. If we're doing it because it's something that is very, very important to us, then we have a greater chance to be able to weather those obstacles and to go through those down times, those times even when we're not even clear on what is going on. We're going to be able to find ourselves in a place where we can actually move through with confidence. And again, that's where setting those realistic expectations and those small baby steps really become important, because when we look at the big picture, it's very big. And when we look at going into that big picture and not have a plan, then that big picture can be overwhelming. One of the things that I've been talking about with the energy shifts that we've been right now and all the tension that is going on between the past and the present and the future, because we're very future oriented in our thinking, is that we can either let our old past patterns drive our behavior, or we can allow the future and the unknown to drive our behavior, or we can be in the present moment and we can take those little baby steps in the present moment in order to feel that satisfaction that we're really looking for. So what I've found is that in the course of trying to really change these patterns is that it was going to be something that's easy. I mean, we have hundreds of self-help books, and I've certainly written my own, and I've talked about personality and the impact of personality. And as I was researching this, I found that what we have to do is we have to create new routines that are going to become part of our desired behavior that's going to be automatic, because that's the only way those old patterns aren't going to have a hold on us. One of the things that I found extremely interesting was that I came across a study that was done in Sweden. And what the Swedish was looking for ways to be able to increase the mindfulness of people around smoking and to increase the quitting smoking rates because of the fact that it's socialized medicine there and that a lot of the costs are being associated with the smoking that takes place in Sweden. So this study found that they've been trying to understand this part of human nature, meaning that we can really desire to change these old patterns, these old habits, but in fact we don't. So their studies thought that if people were shown the harmful effects and the detrimental effects of smoking to their body, and then what they would do is that they would recognize that smoking is unhealthy. However, what they found is that no matter how much information they threw at the people about smoking and its deadly effects and how it's going to impact secondhand smoking, their family and everything, so no matter what they did to provide the information, it really had little impact on the quitting rates. And what they realized in the study is it turns out that people had a harder time changing their actions to align with their thoughts than the other way around. So when we think of changing patterns, we always think that if I think I can do it, I can do it. Well, that is true to some extent. But what it really takes is it takes the actions to align with the thoughts in order for it to happen. The conclusion of the study was that what makes habits like smoking so hard to change is what also makes them useful. The study actually found that people who tend to smoke did so to manage stress. They did so to relax. It created a social connection with their friends that were also smokers. And it also connected them emotionally to themselves because it made them feel good, because smoking has a very much of a deep emotional comfort to it, the same way that eating does, and that it really connected themselves emotionally and then also connected with other people. So very, very interesting information. Now, if you want to, you know, ask me questions about this, or maybe there's a habit that we can both work on, then give me a call at 877-230-3062. So jumping back into this, is the reality is that habits really make life easy. That's the purpose of habits, is they make life easy. Even if they aren't good habits, they make life easy. So what they do is then the habits, we don't have to think about all of the things that require time and attention. We just go into that state of doing things, what I call rote, meaning that we do things without really thinking about what we're having to do. It's very easy, especially if our lives have a lot of complexities and demands, which all of our lives do, is that having these habits are the fallback. If we, you know, it's easier to stay in the fallback than it is to move forward. So breaking habits begins with between choosing something pleasant or familiar, or with choosing something that may not be as pleasant or as familiar. And that can be a very tough decision. So now I loop back to the point of why it's so important that we actually look at the reason that we form these habits, and we look at the secondary gains associated with those habits. If those habits have served us well in the past and they've kind of helped us skate through the tough times, then trying to change those habits may be more difficult, even if we think we can, even if we, you know, write down on a piece of paper and we affirmed others that we think we can. Then what we do is we aim high to be able to do that. And in reality, we find ourselves always in the state of questioning and always in the state of fear. So when it comes to this breaking of habits, just simply thinking we can do it really isn't going to work, because changing habits requires thought, it requires time, it requires attention, and it requires the willingness to persevere when the going gets tough. And the best way to start that is to figure out why you want this change. So what I'm doing is today I'm actually sharing 11 tips for creating healthy habits. So perhaps the first tip for creating new healthy habits includes spending time figuring out why you want to make this change, and then imagining both the successful results from your efforts and putting a plan in place that you can use when you hit that place where you think you're failing. A plan is a place to be able to prevent the failure. That plan is always malleable. It's always adaptable. You can always change the plan and modify the plan, but without a plan, when you hit those challenges and you hit those obstacles, then the old habits kick in because they're trying to protect you. They're trying to make your life easy. And then as a result, what they do is they take over your thinking. They take over your emotional reaction. They take over your behavior. So this tip actually really involves you seeing yourself dealing straightforward with those obstacles. And if you take the time to imagine yourself as being successful and the results and what is it going to look like, and then this plan that you have is that when you hit that place where you naturally are going to go into that self-deprivation behavior and that self-deprecating talk and feel bad about yourself, then what you can do is pull out the plan and look at it and then figure out what you can do from there. It's, again, the adaptability. And changing habits doesn't have to be hard. I've said that a couple times in the show so far. It doesn't have to be hard, and it can be effortless, but it has to be mindful. That means that we have to really recognize why we're doing this. I loop back to that. And then also, why we want to have this success. What is it going to do for our lives? How is it going to change our lives? And then what we find is, again, a lot of the research that I did, is studies found that after engaging in this two-step process, again, imagining both successful results from our efforts and putting this plan in place, people actually procrastinated less and they tackled their challenges with more enthusiasm, but even more importantly, with self-confidence. So the first tip is let's go in and let's use the natural thing we do as children, and that is the imagination. And allow that imagination to see us successful. Allow the emotions to be there to feel that we're successful and to look at what those results are from the effort that we put into it. And remember that success is effort. One of the things I've heard over and over again is that when someone becomes successful, everybody gravitates to the fact is that they're an overnight success. Well, the reality of it is that it may have taken them 10, 20, 30, 40 years to become that overnight success. And how did they become successful? First of all, they believed that they could. They saw themselves as being successful, and they stuck with it when the obstacles came up. I know as an author, we run up against these rejection letters over and over and over. And it can really go, you can get to the place where you just basically start questioning yourself, what am I doing? Why am I writing this book? And if you're writing this book for, you know, fame and for fortune, one of the things that Reed Tracy from Hays House said to me, Carol, there are over 100,000 books that are written on a yearly basis, and your book is going to be just one of them. So in order to be just one of them and to go through all of the things you're going to go through emotionally and psychologically and feel good about what you wrote is you've got to figure out why you're writing it. And I took that to heart. I took it very deeply into my heart. And I went in and I thought, well, I wanted to write because it's just something I've always wanted to do. It's something that I was told I was good at. But I started digging deeper and I started digging deeper and I really went in and then I thought, well, I'm writing books because I really want to help other people be able to work through what they're going through. So that was that part of the soul that wants to be of service. But when I really started getting into writing the books, I realized that they were a process for me personally to do my work. And in doing my work, in this process, then I could feel confident and sharing what I was sharing and being of service because I was doing the work in the process. So again, it goes back, and when I would hit those places where, you know, in my mind, I really wanted that book to hit that number one bestseller. There's not an author, honestly, if you ask them that wants to write that book, their book, that they do not want to be on that bestseller list. And we can either write a book for the bestseller list and hope it gets there, or we can write a book from our heart, from our knowledge, from what we believe, what we know, what we imagine, and hope it gets on the bestseller list. And if it doesn't, how are we going to handle that? And one of the things is that we recognize as authors that all it takes is changing one person's perception about themselves. And we have been of service in our soul, and we have learned how to do that one thing for us as well. So very, very, very interesting. So tip one, really out of the 11, comes in and basically see yourself, imagine yourself, feel yourself. What do you look like with the successful results from your efforts? Writing a book is not easy. It's very solitary. And once you get into the book, everything around you seems to drop away. And that means that your families have to be understanding, and you basically become the words, and the book becomes your master. And that's the way it is in anything that you believe deeply about. And the best thing to break that first old habit around your self-esteem or your self-confidence is to have a plan in place of what that's going to look like. What I want to do is I want to take a quick commercial break. I'm going to come back and take your calls. So if you have a call, question for me, call me at 877-230-3062. Stay tuned. I'm going to be right back. I'm going to share more of these tips about what we can do, we, you and me, and all of us as listeners on this station. What can we do to change those old habits and to create a better me, or to create a better you? Stay tuned. I'll be right back. Welcome back. And if you're just joining me, the topic of today's show is creating healthy habits. And what I've been doing is I started with number one tip. I'm offering 11 tips on what you can do and what you can use in order to change those old unhealthy habits. And as I started the first segment saying is that, you know, in our human natures, we always aim high and we always seem to fall short. Why is that? Well, it's because those unhealthy habits that we created a lot of times when we were children, in part of that survival or fitting in or wanting to be loved or whatever the motivation have been, may have been, is those healthy habits have now become the limitations that pop up when we're not even aware of it. They actually are in the mind part of the brain, that emotional coffer part of the brain that basically is lurking there, and when something, information comes in, that mind and those old habits and those old memories and those old emotional patterns start to bubble to the surface. And because they're familiar, because they're a no-brainer, meaning we don't have to really think about them, what do? They end up overriding what our desires are, and we find ourselves in that feedback loop, that habit loop, over and over and over again. So I'm going to be sharing 11 tips on things that we can do. I'm also taking your calls. So if you have a question for me, you can call me at 877-230-3062. That number, of course, is good for U.S. callers, international callers, and then, of course, Canadian callers. Also wanted to let you know that I have started doing four-week series, webinar series, and one of my first ones was The Light of the Body. And I actually have the Light of the Body four-part series available now on demand on my website. So if you're interested in that light body and you'd like to know more about it and how it really impacts the physiology of the body, or the physiology of the body impacts the light body, that light body is who we are in our purest form, is the part of us that is associated with our soul. It is the part of us that believes that all things are possible and that all we have to do is to imagine and use our creativity and act. And so that light body, again, rich with information, is a medical intuitive. That light body is very, very much an integral part of the dynamics between health, ill health, and healing. So if you're interested in learning more about the light body or interested in this four-part series, there's actually a extensive workbook, almost a book to each one of the classes that are taught. You just can go on my website, www.ritberger.com. And what you can do is there's a try before you buy, read a page out of the PDF of one of the different workbooks that are available and see if it resonates with you, or listen to a brief excerpt from the audio download and see if it's something that you're looking for. One of the things that I found in the feedback that I've received from people who attended, especially people who are energy workers or work with both subtle and energy work in their modalities, their healing modalities, that the information was of great value. So again, go and check it out, that light body, that beautiful, beautiful, pure, clear, innocent, naive essence of who we are, and the part of us who believes that we can accomplish anything that we desire. So very, very mindful to be able to just go and check it out. So what do we do when we kind of get into looking at these different habits, and how are we going to be able to work our way through it? So what I want to do is I want to go to step two. This is tip two. Tip two, you need to figure out why you're pursuing your objectives in the first place. I go back and loop to what I said in the first segment. Why do you want to do what you're doing? What are your motivations behind it? Now, we can say, well, it's what I should do, and it's what I could do. But the reality is shoulds and coulds might get us there for a month or two, but they really don't have the power to be able to stop that derailing of those old habits. So if we want to do something because it's obvious that we should do or we should do it, then what's going to happen is we're not going to do it. We're going to fall into that fall short syndrome that seems to be associated with breaking or changing these unhealthy habits. So why are you doing it? Again, what is the motivation that's inside? Tip three, I touched briefly on when I was doing the opening. Maintain realistic expectations. If you don't, then what you're doing is you're really setting yourself up for failure. What I mean by that is don't set the expectations from your old habits. I mean, so many times when I'm doing my work as a medical intuitive, I will hear people say, I'll offer a suggestion, and they'll say, well, I tried that and it didn't work. And I said, oh, okay. So what about it didn't work? Well, it just didn't work. Well, what about it didn't work? Well, I don't really know, but it just never got me there and where I wanted to be. And I said, so what we're saying is that because it didn't work, it won't work. Yep, that's what we're saying. And so be it. I accept that, other than the fact their soul is saying to me, don't take what was the past and accept it as the present and the future. Let's go back, Carol, and let's ask it a different way. So I'll say to someone is that, what is the real reason? Why are you doing this? What is the real reason for doing it? And I always get the silence on the phone, and I can hear them breathing, so I know they're still there, and they're thinking, well, one of the best ways to be able to move us out of these old patterns is to think. It's to put attention on something that feels like it's derailing us, or something that's an old pattern, like I didn't do it before, so I'm not going to do it again, so why try? Well, try. What have you got to lose? Make that trying part of the plan. But again, be realistic. I go back to what I was talking about with wanting $2 million. Well, if you want $2 million and the job that you're working on only pays $1,200 a month, then there's got to be some creative ways for you to do this. That creative ways can be investing in other things. The creative ways can be looking for a different job that pays more. Maybe the creative way is that you have an idea inside of you that really feels like it would be a value and service. It's filling a need that's already been established. One of the most difficult things of being an entrepreneur when we get into this realistic expectation part of it is that we try to create products that we think that people need instead of looking at what people need. So it's that realistic expectation that we have, and realizing that there's going to be some bumps along the way. Some of the best plans sometimes don't work out. There's reasons it doesn't work out. And if you have realistic expectations, then what you do is you just say, oh, well, then let me go back to the plan again. Tip 4, avoiding situations that actually trigger old habits that you want to change. That was one of the things I was talking about when I was doing the reading, and they said, well, it didn't work before, so why should I put the effort in it now? Well, what didn't work? So going back in and looking at the situations that you were in, where was your mindset? What was the situation? What were you dealing with from the standpoint of dealing with other people? Were there other people involved? Was this really something that you maybe need to go back and do some more homework? If you've created a product, maybe it'd be worthwhile for you to survey people. I can remember the story of Debbie Fields for Mrs. Fields cookies that, you know, everybody, all of her friends kept saying, oh my gosh, you need to sell these cookies. They're absolutely fabulous. You need to kind of open up a shop and get this going. And they were fabulous cookies, and they are fabulous cookies. But what happened is that she went through all this process. Her husband, a very, very astute businessman, they created a business plan. They had the backups in place. Everything looked like it was an absolute go. She opened up her first shop. She opened her doors, and nobody came in. Nobody bought a cookie. And she was absolutely demoralized and just wondering, what did she do wrong? She did everything by the book that was right. What did she do wrong? And when she started feeling this way and started feeling herself getting down, then she went back and she had realistic expectations based on it that said, okay, so this is how many cookies we need to sell a day. However, if we don't sell that many cookies, then be creative on how to sell that many cookies. That literally was what it was. So what did she do? She opened the doors of the shop, and she let that good cookie smell out. She took a tray of cookies, and she went out, and she started giving them to people who were passing by. Now, that wasn't necessarily on the business plan, but it was to create ways to draw people in. That was part of the business plan. So what she did is when she opened up the doors, there's nothing more enticing to pull you into somewhere than other than a fresh baked cookie. And if they don't come to you, you go to them. And that's what she did. And she watched people when they would eat the cookie and how excited they were and how good it felt and how they would make all these different noises. And that was the motivation that kept her going. And had she not really had that plan and had that back, those realistic, then what she could have done is she could have just said, you know what, this isn't going to work. Let's cut the losses. Let's go ahead and close up. And, oh, my gosh, where would we have all been to not be able to experience those wonderful cookies itself? So what she did is she really avoided situations that would trigger those old habits that she wanted to change. She had a creative plan in place. Tip number five, forgive yourself if you slip up and just keep moving forward. You know, the reality of it is that we can wake up and we can say to ourselves, this is going to be a great day, and today we're going to move this forward, and today we're going to, you know, take that giant leap of faith and that stride that's needed. And the bottom line of it is sometimes you get into the day, things happen, those obstacles come up, the distractions come up, and you find yourself at the end of the day going to bed and thinking, oh my gosh, I didn't do one thing today to move myself forward. So you're going to have days like that. This is something that really happens, especially around the New Year's phenomena around exercising the resolution to lose weight. We can have the best intentions. We can have a plan. We can go buy those new running shoes. We can do all the clothes, whatever it may be. We can call the buddy. We're going to have all that. And then what's going to happen is you get into it. Maybe you wake up one day and you don't feel yourself. And what you do is you say, okay, well, I'm going to get up and I'm going to do this. And the more you get up, the more you don't feel like yourself. So you could press yourself and possibly hurt yourself, or you could say, you know what, today is just an off day and I'm going to pick it up tomorrow. Just because we slip one day doesn't mean that we have failed. It just means that we really need to go back in and look at the things that we can do. What can we do that day? Maybe if our exercise is jogging and we can't jog for the day for whatever reason, time demands, different, maybe not feeling like ourselves. What can we do? Well, we can walk. And maybe that's a great solution. It gives us a chance to think. It gives us a chance for a change of scenery. It gives us a chance to use our imagination, creativity. And then at the end of the day, maybe we didn't run that 2 miles, but maybe we walked. And maybe we walked just around the block and we saw something new. So that is what we can do from looking at tip five. Forgive yourself. Be kind to yourself. I mean, we're very patient and tolerant with others. Let's be patient and tolerant with ourselves and just cut ourselves a little slack. Cutting ourselves a little slack doesn't mean that we're lazy. It just means that something today may not move us forward the way that our mind thinks we need to. So we just take a baby step. We take those slow steps that we need. So tip number six, think about how making the change will help you become the person that you aspire to be. Become your own role model. And one of the things that we do, I mean, I was, when I was way back in the, my world and business world and everything, I was actually a Dale Carnegie trainer. And one of the things that we did is we took people who were absolutely terrified of standing on their feet, talking in front of people, and we created a plan. We let the people know what the plan was, and every week we took one baby step, and we executed what that was going to be when they could stand on their feet. So what we did is we also would go in, and this is one of the wonderful things about Dale Carnegie's book, that the books that he's written and everything, is that we would start out by saying, we had asked people, why do you want to be able to speak in front of groups of people? And when you ask a why question, you get an emotional reaction, and we did. Why do you want to stand in front of people? Some people would say, well, it's mandatory for my job, and my boss brought me here and told me that I had to do this. Well, that's not going to be the motivation that's going to get that person feeling good about the process. So one of the things we'd do in the very first class is we'd say, you know, think about what are you going to look like when you're standing on your feet and when you're talking to people? How is this going to help you feel better about yourself and so forth? And when I actually started using Dale Carnegie as an actual student, is that I went into a job that required me to get in front of a group of people consistently and to be able to talk about the services that the company provided. Now, I've always been one that can get on my feet and talk about the things that I'm familiar with and I'm comfortable with, so that really didn't concern me. But to stand in front of a group that I really believed or felt that I didn't have enough information, or the right information, or were they going to be judging me? Was I going to say something that was going to make me look like I wasn't intelligent, which is an old habit thought of mine? And I would find myself absolutely frozen in fear with the thought that I was going to have to get up in front of people and talk to them. And so my new boss put me into the Dale Carnegie program, How to Win Friends and Influence People. And that was one of the first things we did, as I did as a student. It's like, so how is this going to help me to aspire to the person that I can be? How is this going to help me be able to do the job and feel good about me doing the job? And as it turns out, by the end of the class, I was always on my feet enjoying what I was doing. I started speaking in front of groups, and I would speak at, you know, kind of choose those groups very honestly. That was part of the plan, starting slow. I'd choose those groups, and what I'd do is I'd go with the small groups, and I'd go with the groups that I thought I could be comfortable with, and I would go and I would present, and I would get feedback, and I felt good about it. And so then my groups became bigger and bigger, and then one day I got a call that said, Carol, we would like you to come to speak to our large convention. And my first thought was, well, this isn't going to be 10 people. It's not going to be 20 people. So out of my mouth came, so how many people usually come to these conventions? And they said, oh, I don't know, between 3,000-5,000 people. And I could feel myself freezing back up, even with all of this training. But I went back to the plan. I went back to the plan and the part that said, I've done this before. Talk to one person in the audience. That's all I have to do is focus on one person in the audience and talk to them as if it was just the two of us talking and dialoguing. And it helped me get to that place where I stood in front of, actually it was closer to 5,000 people, and I stood there and I shared who I was. And I didn't realize when I did that what change that was going to have in my life, because as I moved into being an author and started speaking in front of groups, the large number of groups would have absolutely frozen me in fear. That was an old habit. So number six, think about making the change that will help you become the person you aspire to be. Tip number seven, come up with fun ways to work toward your goals and ways that you can measure your progress and track your accomplishments. You know, again, when I ask the soul, you know, why is this so hard? And the soul basically, my soul says, well, it doesn't have to be. It can be effortless. And it's like, really? And it's like, yes, it really can. So I have to come up with fun ways to do this. I mean, writing a book can be long hours. It can be sitting. It's very isolated. It's just you, your brain, and your computer, and you're putting words on the paper. And I have to make it fun. So strange as it may seem is that I love puppets. So what I do when I get to a place where I start getting that writer's block, which all people who write will tell you that we hit there, then I pull out a puppet. And sometimes it's Animal, and sometimes it's Elmo, and I have lots of Elmo toys, and I even have these funny things that I put on my head that has a blue star on one side and a red star on the other side. Red star means that I'm stopped, blue star means that I flow, and I flip it around and everything. I mean, if anybody ever came in, and Bruce did at one time, came in, and I'm taking these little headbands and flipping them around with these stars, he just looked at me like I'd fallen off this earth. And he said to me, what are you doing? I said, I'm trying to free up my writer's block. And he goes, really? And I said, yeah, and it's actually fun because it becomes a game. And then what I do is I sit down and I can write a paragraph or I write a page and I feel good about what I wrote, and I'm able to actually track my accomplishments as a writer, because instead of having writer block, maybe I put 3 words on a paper. Maybe I put 750 words. Maybe I put 1,500 words. And my goal as a writer, writing a book, is 70,000 to 75,000 words. Well, if I look at that, that's a very daunting process. But if I do it one word at a time, one paragraph at a time, one page at a time, and I do it in a creative, fun way instead of it being so painful and hard and all the things that all writers will tell you that we talk to ourselves that way, we will come up. Even the most prolific writers will tell you that they have days that they sit down and they can't come up with anything. In that particular case, walk away, use your creativity, do something fun, and come back to it. Tip number eight, imagine how achieving your aim might strengthen your relationship with other people. This is very, very important. The brain is a very social organ. We are designed to be very social people. And what we want to do is, if it's even with me writing books, I want these books to potentially be a difference maker to the person that I'm writing the book for, and to share that. And so by each page, each word, what I'm doing is I'm creating and strengthening my relationship with other people. Part of the creation for my Soulful Connection bracelets were that as I create these bracelets and put them together, which I absolutely love doing, it's a wonderful creative diversion. Some of the, you know, great, the things of writer's block I get comes forward in a very clear, concise way. I've got tablets next to my, and pens and paper next to my beading area, and I just jot down notes. But what I want is I want that deep community connection, and that can come through words that we write. It can come with the outreaches, being a part of a support group, creating these Soulful Connection bracelets, whatever it may be. So imagine how this is going to, whatever you seek to strive to, how is it actually going to strengthen your relationships with other people? Tip number nine. Prepare yourself for specific situations should your old habits hijack your good intentions. In the case of aim being where the aim is quitting smoking, see yourself as saying no thanks if you're offered a cigarette. If you find yourself into a place where you're actually feeling like you really are hit that old habit and it comes up and it goes, why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? Why are you doing this? Then what you do is you say to yourself, because it's making a difference. I want to do this. I am doing this. Look at the why. Bring that why back up. And see yourself as saying to yourself that this is why I'm doing what I'm doing. And, you know, no thank you. And if you find that you emotionally eat and that bothers you, don't put yourself in situations where you emotionally eat. And if you have a friend that emotionally eats with you, then you'll want to avoid, when you're in that emotional state, spending time with that friend who emotionally eats with you. And if you are with that friend and she's emotionally eating or he's emotionally eating and you don't want to do that, visualize, imagine yourself as not, as just saying no thank you. So tip number 10 is frame your intention as positive actions and see them as already done. Here's where affirmations really are of great value, because what affirmations do is they are positive self-talk. They are using words that are in present time, and the pretense behind them, the intention behind them, is you have already accomplished them. Again, if it's the case of smoking, see yourself saying no thanks rather than I will not take a cigarette even if it's offered to me. That is an old pattern. It's an old habit. It's an old mantra that we've created that this is the way I'm going to quit smoking. I'm not going to say no thanks. I am not going to take that cigarette. And I am not going to find myself in this old pattern. It's the same way when you're out and you hit that emotional eating time. Maybe you have a pattern around that where 3 o'clock is a very vulnerable time. And so don't put yourself in a coffee shop where you have a lot of sugars and you have all these wonderful goodies in their counters and everything. And change that. Or if you should find yourself there and it's 3 o'clock, get up, go outside. Go change the scenery. Don't put yourself in a situation where you're going to walk up to that counter. You're going to look at all those nice, yummy little sweets, and you're going to stand there looking at them and say to yourself, I am not going to eat one of those. I am not going to eat one of those. And then what you find is one of those are in a bag. You've paid for it. It's in your mouth, and now the old habit has won out. And tip number 11, picture yourself savoring your accomplishments and feeling personal satisfaction for having stuck with the plan. Very, very important. Personal satisfaction is the key. It isn't so much about being happy with yourself. It's feeling that deep satisfaction that you were able to look at that obstacle in the eye and use that creativity and imagination to see it different and to stick with the plan and be realistic and to be able to take that process in a slow, methodical way and to be able to feel that accomplishment that comes with getting it done. And when you do that, there's a motivation that's triggered deep within the soul that basically says, yay, hooray, hallelujah, you did it. Good job. Now what we can do is let's take the next step. So personal satisfaction is, again, the difference maker between sticking with the plan and changing those habits or whether those old habits are going to derail us. So very, very important. Remember that changing old habits can be hard when we first start. That's something to be very, very kind to ourselves, that we really have to go into that place where it is literally going to be able to help us to be able to move beyond ourselves. There's where the personal satisfaction. I'm doing a 4-part webinar on understanding and healing pain, specifically chronic pain, and I cannot believe how much I'm getting out of this class that I'm actually teaching, and as I'm doing the research, and then I feel absolutely fabulous. So remember, it may be hard when you start, but it becomes easier with time. You get that personal satisfaction, and then what you do is you get to savor the accomplishments. Thank you so much for joining me. It's been absolutely fabulous to share this with you. I've certainly learned a lot. I hope that you have. Please join me again next Wednesday at 10 a.m. Have a great week. Light and love to you and good health. I'll see you next week on the radio.
You've been listening to The Carol Reiberger Show. Join Carol next week and every week at 10 a.m. Pacific Time on ContactTalkRadio.com. To contact Carol, visit her website at www.reiberger.com. That's www.ritbergere.com. See you soon.